level of excitement. Many of you are a little faint of heart. You might want to excuse yourself. If you had been a New Yorker walking in the streets of the theater district in October of 1944, you would have seen posters advertising what was clearly the most exciting musical event of the season. Pictured on that poster was a rather matronly looking lady clad in a long white gown covered with lace and a diamond tiara on her head. The poster announced the appearance in concert of Florence Foster Jenkins, coloratura soprano, assisted by the Pastorella Music Society. The performance to be held at Carnegie Hall. It was the hottest ticket in town. All the tickets sold within 2 hours. On the night of the performance, more than 2,000 people were turned away. Fans tried to buy tickets at 10 times their face value. When the boisterous concert was over, this famous performer was given a thunderous ovation, which had the added benefit of drowning out the substantial chorus of laughter and jeers that also greeted this performer. Florence was 76 years old when she sang her memorable concert. It was the last concert she would sing. It was truly a night to remember, and we're still talking about that unique event all these years later. It was unique in many ways, not least of all because, as Alexander McCall Smith put it recently, Florence's famous voice was gloriously, spectacularly, and irredeemably out of tune. So the question becomes, how did Florence Foster Jenkins wind up on the stage of this famous venue? And even more mystifying, why did so many people flock to listen to her? The answer is complicated, but Greg and I have both decided that it is at its heart a love story. The first answer is that she was on that stage because she could afford it. Never wanted her to be a public performer, when he died, left her enough money to rent Carnegie Hall many times over. Her father, because he loved his daughter, also paid for her as a young woman to train in fine music schools in Philadelphia. And she graduated with highest honors. Florence Foster Jenkins was a serious student of music. She was on the stage also because in her early childhood, she fell in love with performing music. She was considered a child prodigy on the piano and played her first piano concert before the age of 8. And she played and performed for President Rutherford Hayes at the age of 10 when he visited her hometown of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And the thrill of performing and basking in the warm applause that followed performances became an addiction for Florence that would follow her all her life. An injury to her hand of some kind ended her career as a concert pianist, but she could still sing. My favorite scene in the movie depicting her life was that poignant moment when Florence sits at her piano, tinkling out a melody with her one good hand. And then Cosmo McBoone, her accompanist standing next to her, becomes the second hand. In a beautiful, compassionate collaboration, the two of them create a brief moment of pure magic. In a sense, that moment for me becomes a beautiful metaphor for the life of Florence Foster Jenkins. She was also on that stage because she had earned her place by becoming the first lady of the New York music scene. After a terrible marriage, at the tender age of 16, she and her mother moved to New York, and New York was the place to be. They quickly became involved in the societies of well-to-do women that met regularly to discuss issues, to socialize, and most of all, to sponsor music events of all kinds. And this was where Florence truly began to flourish. She and her mother belonged at one time to more than 40 societies, and Florence was the officer and the main leader of at least 12 of those societies. She was generous with her time and money, helping to support emerging musical talents. She produced many, many dozens of performances, and with her gift for spotting talents, most of her productions wound up making money. She and her well-heeled friends raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for a variety of charitable causes, including at one point $100,000 for the New York Beethoven Symphony. Florence was the go-to person if you wanted to get something done in New York, and she was one busy person. She would have left Greg Berg in her dust except maybe Sunday. She wrote plays, poetry, lyrics. She commissioned original compositions. She designed sets and costumes. She hired halls, personally sold tickets, and sponsored emerging talented musicians. She was, for four decades, the undisputed first lady of the New York music scene. She was on a first-name basis with Toscanini, Caruso, Lily Pons, and a whole host of famous musical performers. And Florence loved every minute of it. But even more important, Florence was on that stage at Carnegie Hall because she was loved, supported, and perhaps most important, protected by her husband, St. Clair Bakefield, her accompanist, Cosmo McMoon, and a huge, adoring circle of friends in whose eyes she could do no wrong. She loved them, and they loved her. They loved her showmanship, her ridiculous costumes, her dramatic gestures. When she came out on the stage as Brunhilde in armor and spear, or came as the angel of inspiration with her droopy wings, the place would go wild. This, by the way, is my Greg Berg costume. They admired her courage, her audacity, and her devotion to performing in the face of her limitations, which of course she was spared from recognizing until shortly before her death. She was at the center of a love affair with music and the joy of sharing the magic of music with other people. And for those caught up in what I call the vortex of her passion, she was seen as truly gifted, and she had many gifts. Her husband, St. Clair Bakefield, points out that she had perfect rhythm. Her interpretation of musical pieces was good. Her languages were wonderful. She had a star quality about her that made everyone want to look at her. All she ever wanted to do was to bring joy to through her gift of music, and in that role, she succeeded admirably. How did she get away? Some of her critics insisted that she knew perfectly well how bad her singing was. They said she laughed all the way to the bank. But those who knew her best were absolutely convinced that she firmly believed that she was supremely gifted as a singer. And in taking some of the most demanding vocal souls in the world of music, that she was creating a gift for the ages. And in a sense, she was right. She was loved, and she was truly entertained. In her most famous words, "Some people say I can't sing, but no one can say I didn't sing." I think to truly understand Florence, you need to remember her less famous words when she said on one occasion, "I would rather die of starvation than live in a world without Mozart or Brahms or Verdi." Quite a few of you here today might say to those words, a fervent amen. Most of the supremely gifted singers of her generation had long been forgotten. But the love affair with Florence Foster Jenkins lives on. In fact, not long ago, I saw her story come to life in this same area. When a truly gifted singer took on the daunting task of making Florence Foster Jenkins come to life. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. She's here this afternoon. So prepare yourself for a brief sample of something truly glorious. I give you Florence Foster Jenkins, sometimes affectionately known to her friends as Kathy.